If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn. I'm your host. I have with me today Jan Cavell, very, very interesting woman. As a teenager, Jan Cavell went to a very posh UK boarding school, which groomed young ladies for marriage. Well, failing to be groomed, Jan progressed to London and became a suitable secretary, which lasted about a week. With a keen desire to be independent, Jan started working her way through a succession of jobs, finding secretarial work a nightmare and sales easy. She hated being employed and at the mercy of the decisions and expectations of others, so initiated a series of hustles from selling to catering. She traveled around Europe and had a memorable job as a cook, but also found some excitement in taking an old ferry boat for a test sail to see if she was seaworthy. She wasn't. A marriage left Jan with two small kids to support and very little experience to do so. Refusing to go out to work and leave them, she started a small business, telephone selling bits and pieces to interior designers, operating from a shelf under the stairs of her tiny cottage. After a lot of mistakes and crazy gambles, it succeeded and became a multi-million pound business. The designers wanted furniture, but as Jan was no furniture designer, she put her sales hat on, looked what sold, and developed her current ranges, earning herself the honorable title of quote-unquote designer. Despite awards and exciting experiences, Jan still struggled with insecurity and imposter syndrome. Once her son had left for Australia, she struggled to scale the business, not having the same motivation she had with small kids to support, and after several years and progressively worse health, decided to break it up and sell the only bit worth having, which was the brand. It took Jan quite a little while to crawl back out of her hole after that, but she decided she wasn't beaten. She had always wanted to write since she was small. Jan's first book, Scale for Success, Expert Insights into Growing Your Business, is due to be released this year after winning a contract with Bloomsbury Publishing. So it's full circle. Jan's childhood dream, out of the ashes. Please help me welcome Jan Cavell.
That's amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Jan. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Yes.
Glad to hear
it. Coping with
winter. Coping with winter. Yes, I hear you. You're in the UK, correct?
I am, yes. And we've suddenly got very cold and stormy and horrible.
Oh, I remember. I was in the UK. I was on a speaking tour in the UK and I was on my way back to New York. I get to Heathrow Airport and it started to snow, okay? And it snowed probably a half an inch. The entire airport shut down. No yep. flights going, no flights coming. I couldn't believe this, all right? I come from New York, you know, we get 3 feet of snow. 2 hours later, the airport's open, you know, and here they had a half an inch of snow and the entire airport shut down. In the meantime, I didn't have a hotel anymore, all right? I literally slept in the airport, waiting for the next morning. British Airways was not flying. So I actually ran over there. They had paper tickets back then. I had to go to another terminal. I ran to American Airlines terminal, showed them my ticket and asked if I can get back to New York. And they said, sure, we'll honor it. And they put me back on a plane to New York. Unbelievable.
You're quite right, though. I mean, England, it's not the whole of the UK, in fairness. Scotland copes with snow perfectly well. But, you know, the UK, it is, as you say, one flake and everything's shut.
Yeah. Wow. Yes. Okay. So enough about me. Now, as you know, the name of this podcast is Whispers and Bricks. The whispers are those voices telling us what the right thing to do is, and they represent the good in life. And the bricks represent the bad things that we go through in life. Now, there are several reasons why I asked you to be my guest on the show. After our initial conversation, I knew that there were people in my audience who were going through some of the same things that you had gone through. They had been hit with brick after brick, much like you, and they needed to hear and to know that they could get through the trials and tribulations the same way that you did. They need to know that there were whispers out there that could save them. Now, your life is not typical by any stretch of the imagination. You've had many bricks thrown at you. As we heard from your bio, a posh boarding school didn't work out for you. You got a job as a secretary, lasted a week, amongst many other things that you went through. But I would say that the first major brick that you had been hit with was marrying the wrong person and getting divorced while caring for two small children. Can you take us back to that time and tell us what was going on then?
Sure. I mean, I think it was a lot to do with the conditioning from a posh boarding school, because, of course, all my contemporaries married terribly well-groomed Mr. Wrights, and because I hadn't really fitted in awfully well, you know, I didn't really know many of them or anything else. So I didn't marry somebody who, you know, was able to provide or anything useful in the first place. And we struggled, and actually we lost our first child, which is a hard thing, I think, for any marriage to get through. As well, which I don't actually normally talk about, so it's an extra one. But you know, that made things hard, and we went on to have two more children, but it was tough. And I think we got married too young as well. I mean, he was slightly younger than me. I think I was 23 and he was just 21. So, you know, again, that's a lot of trap so many people, young love, fall into, and it's all going to be wonderful, and of course it isn't. You change.
Right, I hear you. Okay, so now you're at the point where you have two small kids. You have to support yourself. You have to support your kids. How did you manage? What did you do?
Well, the first thing I did, which I was very lucky about because they were much more flexible in those days, was I went along to the income support people.
To the what people?
It's income support over here. So it would be social security.
Income support. Okay,
I do. Yeah, it's a branch of the social security, social support life.
Okay.
Government support anyway. And I went, look, you know, here's my bank balances. It's not a pretty picture, you know, and I've got these two kids and I could stay here, you know, on your books to be supported forever, you know, but alternatively, I don't want to do that. That's not good for you. How about giving me a bit of support while I get a business together and get myself going? And so whether they'd be allowed to now, but I was lucky. I hit somebody with a bit of nice and they said, yes, okay, we'll go along with that theory. You know, we'll give it a try and see how it goes. So I got a bit of support, a tiny bit of support every week from the government. And that was enough to get us a bit of food and keep going. And also it brought me, I was determined, as you say, to start selling things. And so every Friday when I cashed this gyro check, I would buy a trade directory, Yellow Pages phone directory, and get leads. And then I would jump on the phone and sell to my new lot of people in North London or whichever book I'd got.
Now what year was this?
That's a good question. I would have been, that would have been in sort of middle of the 80s.
Middle of the 80s. Say. Okay. Now I'm trying to, you know, place it so that we understand, you know, what, you know, we can better understand what you were going through. Like, in other words, so you didn't have Google and you didn't have.
No, I didn't have a computer. It was would have been the very end of the 80s, given the age of my children. But no, I literally had a fax phone and a card index box and this slowly growing pile of trade directories.
Right. Okay. Go on.
So yeah, I mean, it was all about telephone selling, which, as you rightly say, I had sales experience, because sales is always one of those jobs that if you're prepared to work on commission or just turn a hand for a few weeks, you can usually get experience. So I had managed to chalk up quite a lot of sales experience. Wow. And I was very, very determined. I didn't want to go out to work. I didn't want to put children in the hands of somebody else, you know. Children post a split and never very happy children. And, you know, it was desperately important for me that I stayed at home and could spend time with them. They were only 3 and 8, maybe three or three and six. So very young still, 3 and 7. You know, so it was really important I was around to me. And that meant making this thing work, but it was touch and go for a very long time. It really was.
How did your kids fare in school? Were they okay? Were they good students?
They got bullied to some extent. You know, where I was living out in the country, it was very archaic, really, in its views. And I remember going to see one of their headmistresses and saying, you know, look, this is not really on. You know, I'm not very happy about this. And she said, yes, she said, you know, well, I've spoken to the other mothers and said, you know, that you're a single mother. And you've got to understand, we've never had one of those before.
Like they just dropped you out of Mars or something.
We never had to.
Wow.
I know. So, you know, I don't think that sort of attitude necessarily helps for children very much, you know.
But the kids managed okay.
They've grown up smashing. And, you know, they had a few difficult years, to put it mildly, both of them in different ways. But yeah, they're both doing great now. They've both got their own lives and, you know, doing incredibly well. And they're both married and happy and everything one would want one's children.
Well, that's great. I'm just curious. You said, obviously, you've gone through some serious situations here. And you said you managed to build this business into a multi-million pound business. I mean, that is very, very impressive. But it's like, what was the business? Was it just selling odds and ends? Was it? I mean, I don't know. Can you?
I don't blame you. I didn't know much either. It started. It really, I thought, you know, my background in sales told me that repeat orders were going to be a good idea. So some sort of service to on a B2B basis was going to be the way forward. And I living in the country, we had a lot of craftsmen. So, you know, I thought, right, okay, be a middleman between people who make things and designers, and they must want stuff made, and, you know, I'll round up people to make it, which was fine for a while. It took a little bit of packaging because, of course, when you're doing sales, it's one thing to sell this fantastic product, which has so many benefits, but do you want anything? It's a far harder concept to package. But gradually, yeah, it got going. And so much so that it's very, very, very slowly, because of limited funds and limited ability. I built it so that the actual manufacturing side came in as well. We started finishing bits and pieces ourselves in a tiny farm building. And then a few years later, when an opportunity arose, because the guy who owned the business that I was buying most of the furniture from at that stage decided to shut up shop overnight, I struck a deal to buy him out, which was, I have to say, more out of panic. I had vaguely thought it was something I'd like to do one day, but it was really, you know, what do you mean? I'm not going to have any furniture Monday morning. I can't. I've got to have furniture Monday morning. So we struck a deal within an hour. And then, you know, off I went. And so I had these two tiny farm buildings with small amounts of people working in them, and grew it from there, because, you know, all of a sudden you were responsible for people and had to do that side of things seriously, as well as your own children.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. Let me ask you this. Did you ever get to a point so low in your life where you said to this, you know, I can't do this anymore. It's too hard. I'm just going to give up on my dreams. I'm done. All right. Did you ever get to that point? And if you did, how did you overcome? How did you come out of that?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think it's the very entrepreneurial thing that when things are tough, we are perhaps so stubborn, perhaps it's the only way to put it, but so determined, we keep going. And then when you get to a goal or a pinnacle, you lose it, because you haven't got that challenge. You haven't got the adrenaline to keep going. And it becomes, what am I doing? Who am I? You know, what's going on here? And so it was always, I find it harder. You know, once the kids were okay and the business was up and running, then suddenly I thought, you know, well, what am I doing? And it's partly exhaustion, I think, too. You just get so burnt out by that sort of pressure. It doesn't feel like it at the time, but you do. It takes its toll. So there were a couple of times, I think, in the middle when I just needed a rest. You know, bringing up two kids on your own is fairly challenging, and growing a business to whatever we had, about 40 people at the time, is another challenge. And so I was worn And then later on again, when I lost my way, as you were describing, when the kids had left home, that was tough. You wondered what the point was. You know, everything I'd done, every motivation I'd had was focused on keeping going for them. And, you know, so they've gone. Now what? Why should I be worth keeping going for? Yeah, tough.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. So what helped you turn it around? Like, let me ask you this. What are you doing now?
I mean, I think that was one of the things that kept me going. I'd started to write articles during the last few years when I was in business and loved it. As you rightly said, I wanted to do it as a child. And it became my sort of stress reliever to write articles for this magazine. And when I stopped and retired and sort of pulled the covers out over my head and thought, you know, I've had enough of all this, it took me about a week and I thought, what about my writing? You know, so I wrote to my editor and I said, I haven't got a business anymore. What will I do? I can't write. And he wrote back and he said, why exactly does that stop you writing? So I thought, oh, you know, maybe he's got a point. I really didn't see it. I just thought, you know, my usefulness is over. But with his encouragement, he got me writing more articles. And then I began to think, actually, you know, I've got 20 odd years of experience, lots of mistakes, but, you know, also worked some things out along the way and learned a lot from other people. Maybe actually I can be of some use. And I got involved with a lot of campaigns along the way to encourage entrepreneurship. I was very honoured to be picked as one of the first 50 women to represent the UK government in the EU, when we were in the EU, of course. But, you know, to promote entrepreneurship, which was amazing, and to liaise with other countries and talk to schools, business groups, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd become this big champion of entrepreneurship because I'm a real believer in it. And so, you know, again, I thought that's actually, you know, put that passion together with my writing and I could still be a useful individual.
First of all, it sounds very exciting. You know, to be one of 50, you know, to represent the UK, that to me sounds, you know, dealing with, you know, other countries, other peoples. I mean, that must have been very, very exciting. It must have been like invigorating. Am I right?
It was an extraordinary experience. And, you know, I got to go to the European Parliament and, you know, it's sort of things that you just wouldn't get to go to otherwise. And, you know, this was me from, you know, my little shelf under the stairs, you know, it was a tad bizarre almost, but an honour. And I learned, and, you know, there were a few businesses that got set up later along the while from another campaign we ran locally. And, you know, you thought, yeah, okay. This is something good and productive.
Let me ask you this. Who would you say, what person in your life would you say had the most influence on your life and why?
You know, I have tried to come up with the sort of answer that you might expect on this question. And the honest truth is that early American Westerns had the most influence on my life. My father was passionate about Westerns and a big fan of John Wayne and Gary Stewart. Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart, yes.
Gary Cooper is what I'm trying to say. And all that lot. And the whole principle as a child, very influential. Very easily influenced as we are as kids, this whole concept of standing up for the little man and standing up for what's right, you know, and going against the grain, you know, again, going back to me being stubborn, I think, you know, it just really appealed. And it sort of set in a habit of, you know, I want to try and do the right thing and I want to do my own thing in life, you know. So I got addicted to the Oregon Trail and all of that.
The Oregon Trail. That was a game, wasn't it? That was a computer game?
It probably was in the end. This was going back to the original book. And indeed, it's a true story. But yeah.
I remember it because when I was, you know, when I had little kids, when my kids were all little, so there was this game. It was a computer game. One of the early computer games called the Oregon Trails. And it was, you had to, it took you from the East Coast to the West Coast. And, you know, you had to survive and, you know, you had to kill your own meat, and you know, bear. It's just very exciting. And it was an interesting game. You know, it was teaching you survival, how to survive in the West. And it was an interesting game. That's what had the influence on you. That's great. Okay. You know, we'll have to write to John Wayne's heirs and tell him that, you know what your father did?
Well, yeah, I think there's more to films than him in person, but that whole concept of the pioneers, you know, it's such an amazing victory for mankind that they could push forward and win against the odds. It's incredibly inspirational.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let me ask you this. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with my audience before we go? Words of advice or words of wisdom?
I think given what, you know, we've been talking about, I would say two things really, that you've always got choices. If you want something to happen badly enough, you know, I mean, don't go crazy and chuck up your day job. But I can't think what I'm talking about there. But, you know, keep on your day job while you can, but follow your dream till you can give up a day job. Create the life you want. And only you can do that. And, you know, if it means a bit of a fight, it's worth doing. You know, life's too short. Do what you love.
Wow, that's true. Very, 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 very true. Words of wisdom for sure. For sure. Now, if people want to get a hold of you, how can they do that? If they're looking for, you know, do you have a website? Do you have an email address? Yeah. What's the best way to contact you? Social media?
All of those things. I am prolifically on social media, especially Twitter and LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. But they can email me directly on jan@jancavell.co.uk. And the same goes for the website, which is also jancavell.co.uk. Love okay. to hear from anybody listening.
Okay, great. So let's just go over that again. Jan Cavell would be J-A-N-C-A-V.
C-E-L-L-E. Huh?
E-double-L-E, right?
.co.uk.
JanCavell.co.uk. That's great. And you're on social media, Jan Cavell. That's wonderful. Okay, Jan, listen, thanks so much for sharing your story with my audience. I'm sure you've touched the hearts of many people in my audience, or plenty of people going through or going through what you have already gone through. And they needed to hear that they can get out of it the same way that you got out of it. Good luck going forward. Good luck with your writing. We hope to hear some great things coming from you. And thanks so much. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Schoenberg. Remember, if you feel like you're stuck in the mud, like you're spinning your wheels, wasting time in your career, your business, your life, if you know you're not enjoying all the success, satisfaction, and significance that you desire, then it's time for you to book a call with me at callwithari.com and check out my Whispers and Bricks Academy. Until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.